You people have been chosen to reveal our existence to the world. You will witness what happens here today, and you will tell of it later. All eyes to the front.
You are listening to the Geeks for the Win podcast.
And welcome to episode 4 of Geeks for the Win, the podcast where we simply geek out over anything and everything that's considered geeky. We're recording today very early on Sunday morning, 9:24 a.m. Central Standard. I'm joined today with my co-host and a very special guest for a very special episode. My name is William, a.k.a. Poetic Soul 44.
And my name is Mark, also known as the Prophet 209 on Twitter, Xbox Live, and PSN.
And I'm Stuart, known across the internet as Kind of There.
And I'm Cookie, a.k.a. 360 Cookie, so we can talk.
Okay. Well, we said, like I said, this is a very special episode. This is our Doctor Who, I guess, round table episode, where we're going to be talking about Doctor Who seasons 1 through 4 and the Doctor Who specials. Well, I guess we can just, you know, get into it with the very beginning of Doctor Who, season 1, episode 1, entitled Rose, where basically, you know, the show's introduced. For me personally, I thought, you know, the special effects were a bit cheesy. Besides that, it really hooked me. I mean, the story and just, I mean, it seemed, you know, interesting. I mean, it just grabbed me and had, you know, questions that I wanted to see answered. What did y'all think about it? Mark?
Well, it kind of reminded me of like one of the first Buffy episodes, the more I think about it. Like the monster, like another one of those Monster of the Week type of shows that was going to go on. You know, Buffy ended up being pretty good, but you know, like you say, the special effects were kind of cheesy. The story, you know, was a little cheesy, and it seemed like it didn't grab me like I thought it might. You know, I gave it a try, so I started watching Torchwood first. So seeing this compared to Torchwood, Torchwood's a little more gritty compared to this. And, you know, I wasn't too thrilled by the first episode, but there was enough of something, you know, of where it was going to go that made me stick around.
All right. Stuart, what do you think?
It was a okay first episode. I mean, you know, by the time I actually watched it, I was basically already hooked because I'd seen future episodes. So I knew I could just, you know, power through this and get through to the better episodes, which came in boatloads.
For me, like Stuart, I'd already watched, like, seasons 2, 3, and 4. So it wasn't necessarily that it hooked me, more that I wanted to find out what had happened in the first season and how, like, Captain Jack and people like that were introduced. But I think, as a first episode, it's not too bad, I guess. Like, the overall story is not too bad, but, like, William, you said, like, the special effects are horrible compared to what we were seeing in, like, season 4 and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, overall, Doctor Who general, there's not, you know, a lot of special effects. I mean, it doesn't get to, you know, like Avatar or anything, you know, too spectacular. It's mainly the story that, you know, seems to be what draws, you know, interest in. But, okay, I guess we can go to our favorite episodes of the season 1. And the first one would be Aliens of London / World War III, a two-parter.
Yeah, for me, I don't know, it's like, the reason I like these episodes so much was because they started to introduce, like, all the other characters, like, Minnie and Rose's mom, I can't remember her name now.
Jackie,
that's it. They started to introduce them more, like, they seemed like they had a proper role, rather than just a throwaway character, I guess. And, like, the alien, the Slovena side, like, their fart and things like that, I think it was just an overall good episode. Just that it showed you what was to come from Doctor Who, I guess. It was the first proper episode that gave you an insight into what was to come in, like, seasons 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. They did start to show, you know, characters, and, I mean, they even showed Harriet Jones, you know, and, I mean, she ends up being, you know, a character throughout the series. Not huge, but, you know, just a character who has her moments.
An important character.
An important character, yes, that has her moments in certain episodes. Mark?
Yeah, after Mickey's apparent demise in episode one, that they actually brought him back and made him a good character. You know, and it does show, you know, not only Doctor Who and what he's capable of doing or, you know, his purpose, it also shows how the world responds to him. You know, how the Prime Minister, how there's a whole Torchwood set up for, you know, to try to find this doctor.
Stuart, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was good because, you know, again, you know, it introduced, you know, Jackie and Mickey a lot better. You know, it just gave them more purpose in the series. And I really liked how, you know, Jackie got mad at, you know, Rose for leaving for supposedly a year when she was just gone for however long she was actually gone. I liked that whole thing.
Right, and it shows how the mother was dealing with it not too well, and, you know, show the first, like, conflict between Jackie and the doctor.
And I like Jackie hit the doctor.
Yeah, and then something I just realized, too, this was an episode that they showed Sato from Torchwood. She made an appearance in there. And she was doing the autopsies of the alien.
Yes.
So me watching Torchwood first, it was good to see the, you know, the nods and where some of these characters started originating from. So.
Yeah, you see the universe, the Doctor Who universe expand, basically. Any other thoughts on this episode?
No, other than that, the huge plot hole where the Doctor sends a missile towards London. other than that.
Yeah. Okay.
The explosion was just big enough to destroy that one building.
Yeah.
No, and saved everybody outside. Yeah, that was good. Good job.
Just made it outside of the blast radius, just in time.
I mean, it's an over 900-year-old alien, you know, I mean, 900-year-old Time Lord, so, I mean, you know, anything can happen, I guess. But next episode would be Father's Day. Mark, do you want to start this one?
Well, you know, I guess all these episodes that have anything to do with the father-daughter relationship was, I guess, special for me since I have a daughter. And, you know, it was good to see. You know, this was like really Rose getting expanded time, you know, developing her character. You know, what she would do, you know, she got a chance to save her father on that fateful day. You know, even though the doctor said, you know, I can't, you know, you shouldn't interfere with the time because it has grave consequences. And pretty much show that it does have grave consequences as the episode keeps going. But, you know, it also, you know, gives us a peek that a doctor just can't go back and just undo everything. Even things that could probably be simply undone is just some way or another it won't be right, so.
Yeah.
It's a good episode just because it shows what, like, that universe is missing with there being, like, no more Time Lords, or, like, well, only one Time Lord left. Just that, because the whole point of it is that when the Time Lords were around, that sort of stuff could happen, and it just be fixed, like, straight away. Like, there'd be no need for them aliens to come. So, and it's just that kind of thing. And, like, the fact that it's the first real episode where they explore, like, what you can actually do with the TARDIS. Like, in that they have themselves in two places in the same time, twice.
Right. You know, it dispels a lot of myths, or shows you some of the, like, ground rules. Yes, you can interloop with time, but no, you can't do certain things because it will create the paradoxes and stuff. What was the story with the Reapers, actually? I mean, I did understand that they came about because of the change, but, you know, refresh my memory on that.
Yeah, they came to, like, fix the hole in time. Like, I think the exact words were, like, to heal the wound or something like that.
You would figure when that happened, they would go after Pete, but no, they just killed everybody. So that...
Yeah, that's, like...
That didn't make sense, but, you know... By this time in the series, I'm already started accepting, like, listen, some of this stuff aren't going to have a really good explanation. Just go with it. don't overanalyze some of the little stuff.
Yeah, this was probably my least favorite of the season. I'm not saying I hated it, but, you know, you have to have a least favorite.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
And this was mine.
Just because it didn't seem like there was much going on.
And I guess, you know, with Mark, you know, there's a father-daughter thing, and I don't have that. So I guess it doesn't hit me like it did with him.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the same way with me. I mean, I can see as a, you know, in a father's perspective, I mean, you know, I could see how that would, you know, make the episode more special.
Yeah.
Because I guess from my recollection, too, the episode, in the end, he was more than willing to sacrifice himself to save his daughter. And, you know, stuff like that touched deep, you know?
Well, I guess we can move on to another two-parter episode. The
Empty
Child and the Doctor Dances.
Yeah, these are my favorites. Stephen Moffat is probably my favorite writer for Doctor Who, which makes me very glad he's taken over for season 5. That's a good part for me. Because he does creepy very well. And, yeah, the whole child in the gas mask walking around controlling phones that aren't plugged in, and asking everybody, are you my mummy? And it's also the introduction to Captain Jack.
Oh, yes, Captain Jack. One of my favorite Doctor Who companions.
That's easily the best part of them episodes.
Yeah, just his introduction made these episodes some of my favorites because, as I said, watching Torchwood first, I've already seen Jack and Axel. It was really good to see him introduced in the way that he was.
Yeah, I really liked the interaction between, you know, Chris Eccleston and John Barrowman. Did I say his last name?
Yes.
It's Barrowman.
Yes.
Barrowman, yeah, okay.
Barrowman.
Just between them, it was good. You know, I love how Jack was making fun of the doctor because he's a sonic screwdriver. And he said, you know, who looks at a screwdriver and says it could be more sonic?
I mean, all those interactions with either Doctor Who or Rose was always classic.
Yeah, but I gotta agree with Casual, the whole, you know, this episode was very creepy with the whole kids, you know, with the gas masks for faces and just, you know, the whole, are you my mommy? I mean,
But see, that's what I like about Doctor Who now is that, or about this time, is that they could do creepy and you can be creeped out, but 2 seconds later you're laughing your ass off at some, you know, some little comment. And then they go right back to being serious, especially after this doctor.
Yeah.
It's like, if you ever have kids in a TV program and you put them in, like, a spooky way, then it's automatically terrifying.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, some of the creepiest movies involve kids. But we don't want to get into that. Okay, the next...
Hey, well, before we go on, I wanted to, you know, clarify this to me again. Doctor Who's actual name, for those who might be listening and don't understand that how his name came about. how he got the name the Doctor. Anybody care to explain, or?
That was, I think if my memory serves, when they were, like, children as Time Lords, the Master chose the name the Master because he wanted power, and, like, the Doctor chose the name the Doctor because he wanted to heal people and help people. I think it's just that he had a proper name, but I don't think he's ever actually said it.
Yeah. I mean, they clearly make, you know, they say that towards, you know, the later, you know, later on in the series.
Yeah, I think the only person that actually knows the Doctor's name that's still alive is that River Song. I guess
if,
we'll find out why.
If you call her alive, still alive.
we'll get to that, right?
Yeah.
Alrighty. I guess next to the season finale, which is my favorite episodes of this season. Bad Wolf in the Parting of the Ways. I mean, I just love this episode because, I mean, it was just hilarious at the beginning when, I mean, the Doctor, Rose, and Captain Jack were, you know, teleported to, you know, Section 5, where it was basically a giant, you know, TV studio for reality shows. Satellite 5, yeah. It's early in the morning, so thank you for correcting me. But, I mean, the whole, you know, Weakest Link, Rose being on the Weakest Link, and the android was just, I mean, that was priceless.
Yeah, I mean, that's what made my mom turn around and start watching a little bit. Was because of the android. She thought that was really, really funny.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Big Brother thing with the Doctor, that didn't really, you know, I was like, okay, that's a bit weird, that's interesting. But, I mean, but the whole, you know, the Weakest Link and whatever Captain Jack was on, the makeover show, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, and then once again, they went ahead and had you laughing at the same time these guys were playing a game for the death. So it was a very funny, you know, light moment, but, you know, if they lost, they died. So.
Yeah, I think that show that Captain Jack was on, I think it's called What Not to Wear, I think.
Oh, really?
I think that was just brilliant just because of all the people that actually did do the shows. They had all the voices and stuff. I think that's what made that episode for me.
Well, we have What Not to Wear over here, but it's American.
We do?
Yeah, it's on TLC.
Yeah, I think just the way they do that in Doctor Who, like, they have, like, all the different English actors that are not necessarily big everywhere else, but big names in England. I think that's part of makes Doctor Who so special.
Yeah, I guess it's a shame because, I mean, well, here we go. I forgot again. I forgot the episode, you know, where before it was Satellite 5, the long game.
The long game.
When it was, you know, when it was the news, you know, whatever thing.
With Simon Pegg.
Yeah, Simon Pegg. That I get, because he's been in movies, you know, like, you know, Star Trek and Shaun of the Dead and stuff like that. We can, you know, see that cameo, but it kind of gets lost, you know, in translation as far as, you know, some of the other, you know, major actors in the UK, which is, I guess, is a shame for us, but, eh.
Does it degrade how good the show is, though?
Oh, not at all, but I'm just saying, you know, someone like Cookie can appreciate that more, I guess.
Well, I mean, if you look at it this way, I mean, if you have a bunch of cameos, every time you see that person, you see him in their other role. Because, like,
the way they do it in Doctor Who is just, like, it's not necessarily people that are still playing the roles that they're known for, I guess. And you never really, and they're mostly just brilliant actors, but you never really see them as that role. They haven't necessarily been typecast. They just are what they are in Doctor Who.
I mean, with Simon Pegg, you know, I kept seeing him, you know, as, you know, Sean from Shaun of the Dead.
Really?
You know, just you know, standing in the middle of the street going, da 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 da.
You got red on you. But I didn't see him as, you know, Sean. I mean, he seemed like a different character to me.
Well, I mean, he didn't act that way, but every time I looked at him, that's what I saw.
Yeah, I guess you're right there.
For me, it was just sort of like, I didn't necessarily see him as any of the characters played. I just, whenever he was on screen, I was like, that's Simon Pegg. Not that's whatever his name was in Doctor Who.
I don't know Simon Pegg, just for the record.
You never saw Shaun of the Dead, or Hot Fuzz, or
Star Trek?
I've seen a new Star Trek. Who's he in the new Star Trek?
He was Scotty.
Oh, okay, I know that guy then. Yeah, I've seen him in other things, but not Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
You've got to watch Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, I guess I got to. But that sounds like something we'll have to talk about in another episode.
Yeah, okay, but I guess with your tangent, you know. But, on this episode, after they find out, you know, after they escape the reality games, you know, they find out it's basically run by the Daleks, you know, Doctor Who's, you know, main enemy, you know. And, I mean, basically, I just love the fact, you know, this showed the Doctor really cared for Rose when the Doctor basically tricked her into, I mean, you know, getting in the TARDIS because he was like, you're brilliant, you know, I have the idea, this may work, and he gets her in, and basically he sends her back to her own time. I mean, because he didn't see any way of, you know, defeating them and also living.
Yeah, I think that was just brilliant, the way they did all that, like, when he had that message playing, where he was just talking, she was walking around, and he just looks at her. I mean, that's so creepy. It's so well done.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this was also the time where I started to actually like the mother, Jackie. Just because, I mean, when they're trying to, you know, help, when Mickey is trying to help Rose, you know, get the TARDIS back working and all that, I mean, Jackie comes, you know, with the big, you know, construction vehicle or whatever, and I mean, that's when I started to actually think, oh, she's not such a bad, you know, character. I mean, because before, I really didn't like her. She was a bit irritating for me.
Yeah, she's like, she knows a bit more than she will at some.
Yeah.
In the end, she just ended up being a mother. I mean, she might have been annoying as far as how she portrayed it, but, you know, she was just, in her way, just caring for Rose. But by this episode, you know, it's like all of them have formed kind of like a family bond, so. No, that was good.
Yeah,
everybody was a hero, willing to sacrifice each other for, you know, sacrifice themselves for to save other people.
Yeah, even Mickey, you know, kind of gave up trying to get, you know, Rose back because, you know, he knew he could not compare to the Doctor at all, which is, you know, a bit sad because, you know, I've been there, not with the Doctor, mm-hmm. but. I kind of know how he felt.
You mean, for me, I was just like, I was pissed that he didn't send Captain Jack back as well. Like, he'll send Rose back, but he'll just leave Captain Jack to die.
Well, he loved Rose, though, and Dr. Jack is like, I mean, not Dr. Jack, Jesus. And a new character here. Yeah, Jack was pretty much in the same sacrifice mode as a doctor by that time, too. Doctor kind of knew that he would at most maybe be able to save one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same in the Aliens of London episode, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the doctor's quote letter.
Well, I mean, with this part, I mean, he thought, you know, he realized he had to, you know, save Rose, and Captain Jack was, I mean, he was a bit far away. I mean, and he had to, you know, quickly get her excited and trick her into, you know, going into the TARDIS. And so I don't think there was really any time to save, you know, Jack, Captain Jack.
Yeah, because he had to finish working on what he was doing. He didn't have time to go get Jack and bring him back.
Yeah, or Rose probably would have figured it all out.
Yeah.
All right, explain to me all the Bad Wolf stuff, because, I mean, I thought that was pretty cool how they did that.
Well, I mean, we can start with when Rose actually, you know, she takes in the heart of the TARDIS, and she goes back, basically, and she, you know, she destroys all the, you know, the Daleks, and she brings Captain Jack back to life, and basically she takes, you know, the Bad Wolf on the wall there, and she just spreads it throughout time to basically give them the clue, you know.
Yeah, because she figured out, because she kept hearing or seeing Bad Wolf throughout time, you know, starting with the Unquiet Dead, you know, because she heard Big Bad Wolf there, then, you know, she kept seeing Bad Wolf throughout time, really.
Her and the Doctor, yeah.
Yeah.
It got to the point where the Doctor realized it, and it got all serious, and then he was like, then he just made a joke out of it.
Yeah, I think also just like the phrase Bad Wolf, I think it was like, in season 2 that they explained like Bad Wolf just means the end of the world, or the end of the universe even. I think so that's just what it actually means, like, just like the actual phrase of it.
Yeah, I mean, this episode is, I mean, also another reason why it's my favorite of the season is just because it leads up to a few important things in the Doctor Who universe. I mean, at the end, it shows the Doctor, you know, regenerating because he had to, because he, you know, basically took back the energy from Rose. So, I mean, it introduces a new Doctor, and Captain Jack is back, which plays a big part later on.
How did they explain that Rose is able to take on that power anyway? She should have probably been fried instantly if it forced the Doctor to regenerate.
Well, she would have died eventually.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily that she died straight away. It's just it'd be over time, I guess. She died.
Yeah, it showed her brain was, like, overloading, basically.
What about the TARDIS? What history do you guys have of the TARDIS? I know, Stuart, you watched some of the older episodes.
Season 1, it looks completely different in the older episodes. Like, in the previous, it was just basically a white room with a console in the middle. And this one, well, actually, started in the movie with the Eighth Doctor, but that's bad enough. I'm not going to go into that. Yeah, this actually showed, you know, like the, see, how was it put? The desktop theme. Is that how it was put? It was changed?
I think you said they could just, like, change it whenever they wanted, sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe it was in one of the Children Need specials. He said that he just changed the desktop theme.
Yeah.
Which I thought that was funny.
I thought that was funny, too.
And it always chose, like, something that fit in with the time, but then it got stuck as a call box thing during what era?
In the 50s, I think it was. He just kind of kept it that way. I mean, it's always looked like that, but, you know, that's just how they said it.
Yeah. And, I mean, and we kind of, again, it's another thing where we're lost in translation, living in America. I mean, a police box right off the bat, we don't really know too much, you know. It's not too familiar to us, as
yeah,
it might
I mean,
be.
If you put a police box in the middle of America, everyone's going to notice it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess we can move on to season 2 if no one has any more thoughts on season 1.
Yeah, I'm good. We can go.
Okay. First, we would is the Christmas Invasion. I believe, Mark, this was yours? Your favorite? You want to lead the conversation?
Sure. As we were saying in the last part of season 1, you know, the Doctor had to regenerate for taking power back into the heart of the TARDIS from Rose. And, you know, they introduced the David Tennant character. His character, you know, David, I got so used to Eccleston playing the Doctor that I was taken back when David Tennant was introduced. So I was just wondering if he would be able to carry the torch, so to speak. So this episode, pretty much all of the season openers and the finale are my favorite episodes. But this one, David Tennant did such a good job about taking the role of the Doctor. He was only in the episode probably for like 10 minutes max. The first, three-fourths of the episode, he was laying out in the bed.
All it takes to get the warmth to David Tennant.
Yeah, right. I saw an interview with him saying that while he was laying in that bed, he was trying to figure out how he was going to portray the Doctor. And he said it didn't hurt that, you know, he had Billy Piper, you know, bending over him, wiping his brow and stuff like that.
Right. So, soon as he hopped up, I don't know how it was with you guys, but within the first 2 minutes, he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna light this ride. This guy's gonna take the Doctor to a new place." He was just so much more. To me, he seemed like he was so much more in command and willing to do what needed to be done. He's much more brash to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like when they're actually on the ship and he was just still asleep in the TARDIS. It's like he wakes up from the tea, and he comes out and like it's like everything just belongs to him automatically. It's like he's just in complete control and he's just talking, like ignoring everything else. It's just brilliant the way it's done.
Yeah, and the way this style of delivering the lines, he's very fast paced, but at the same time you get every word. It wasn't like, to me it seemed like Eccleston's delivery here to be a lot more slow talking and more deliberate to get his point across. This Doctor, he can almost be talking, it almost seemed like he was talking gibberish at times, but he was always in control. Like, everything was going so much faster for him, but
at times he does talk gibberish.
Yeah, but...
But it makes complete sense.
Right.
Yeah, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly stuff.
Exactly.
He's explosion at 100 miles an hour, but you're right there with him. I don't think there's been, like, one episode where I've just been completely lost and had to, like, rewind it or something.
Exactly. And, I mean, they even make that, you know, they make that point in the next episode that we're going to discuss, school reunion. I mean, they even make that comment in the episode how the Doctor, you know, talks, you know, so fast and the companions just, you know, look at him and basically just nod. Anyone want to have any more thoughts?
Well, this is
the same. He lost his hand in this episode, and that ended up being a very important key later on in this and in Torchwood.
Exactly. I mean, and we see in this at the end, you know, he says, you know, I'm a no second chance kind of man, or along those lines, and we kind of see a little dark side to the Doctor. I mean,
seems a little more mean, like he's more able to do, he's more willing to do what needs to be done to complete the job. Like he gave the aliens one chance.
Oh, yeah, it's like, you don't really see anything like that again until Wars of Mars, but it just shows, I guess, how the series could be. It'd been almost Wars of Mars. I mean, that was a brilliant direction.
Yeah, and we'll get talking about the Waters of Mars later.
Oh, of course. I mean, but I guess we wrapped that episode up. Okay, getting on to the next episode, I guess, would be School Reunion, where we have yet another cameo. Anthony Head from, otherwise known, you know, as Giles from Buffy.
School Reunion is just another great episode, like Aliens of London. It's just one of those ensemble episodes where it's not all down to the Doctor. It's like he's not necessarily doing everything. It seems like everyone seems just as important as he does. I think that's why it's just a brilliant episode, and like it's sort of like a mini season finale in the way they do it. like a mini version of the season 4 finale, which I love that one as well.
Yeah, because you see Sarah Jane Smith, which we haven't seen since, you know, the sixth Doctor, I do believe. So, I mean, that was a good thing to have.
Yeah, and it also pretty much shows that, you know, that Sarah Jane was a companion of the Doctor, for those who didn't know. I guess it's from the series, you know, those earlier series that I didn't watch.
Yeah, and I liked
the Sarah Jane series.
I was gonna say I like Mickey's comment how he Sarah Jane and Rose are talking, and Mickey turns to the Doctor and says, "Mrs. and the X, that's something you don't want to have," or something along those lines. I thought that was good.
Mickey was funny in this episode because he was also comparing himself to be like K-9.
Yeah.
So it was funny. I like Cookie was saying, you know, with all the extra guest appearances in this one, it seemed like a finale in which everybody had a role to play, because the Doctor definitely going to take this on by himself.
Yeah, and
plus, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, part of, you know, the story of, you know, like the kids, you know, typing all that and learning all that, I mean, that was a bit, to me, that was a bit far-fetched, but it's still enjoyable. I mean, just because it introduced, you know, some of the new characters. But what were you going to say, Cookie?
Oh, just that it's those kind of episodes where you have, like, all the different characters that necessarily wouldn't usually be in the series. It's those kind of ones that just seem more special. You know, like, specifically the finales where you have, like, in the season 4 finale where everyone's just coming together.
I couldn't agree more. Okay, moving on to my favorite episode of the season is The Girl in the Fireplace. Now, this one, it starts off with, you know, Mickey actually joining the Doctor and Rose, and they're on a ship, on an abandoned ship, it looks like, and they discover, you know, an 18th century French fireplace, which turns out, you know, to be, you know, just looking in on the world of Madame de Pompadour. And, I mean, I love this episode because it's one of the first episodes, I think, that really shows, you know, time travel done really well. I mean, just the whole, you know, concept of going back in time and, you know, just because, you know, they'd be gone for a second, or they'd be gone for like 5 minutes, and it would be, you know, 10-15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, what makes that episode special is just like the chemistry between like the Doctor, Rose, and Mickey. Like, especially with the horse, where Rose is just telling the Doctor he can't keep the horse and stuff, and the Doctor's, and like Mickey is complaining. He's asking why there's a horse on the ship when there's actually windows into the 18th century. It's just that kind of dialogue between the characters just shows like how well shows can be done.
Yeah. I really like the Doctor finally the horse, and Mickey asks, you know, what was the horse? And Doctor turns to him and says, you know, what's 18th century France doing in a spaceship? Get your priorities straight. I like that. Because it's, you know, one of those, you know, it can be, you know, a joke, just a quick joke 1 minute, and then right back to serious. That's what I really like about Doctor Who.
Yeah. I mean, and I just, at the end, I just thought it was, you know, just, it was so interesting, the fact, you know, they were all curious of why, you know, it was Madame de Pompadour, you know, why they needed her. And I mean, we just see, you know, the spaceship was named as Madame de Pompadour. And they didn't even know. Brilliant, I thought. Any other comments?
I think, for me, that's just one of those episodes that I can just watch over and over. It's just so well done.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Getting into the next episode, it's not one of our favorites, but I think it should be mentioned because it introduces a new villain, an important villain, which is the Rise of the Cybermen episode, where basically, I mean, they end up going to an alternate, you know, universe, and, I mean, where, you know, Rose's father is alive and successful,
and she's a dog.
Rose is a dog, and Mickey is actually Ricky.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
And, I mean, also, I mean, Ricky is, you know, he's a confident, you know, brave, and when Mickey is kind of, you know, just, you know,
the opposite,
kind of cowardly, you know, and a little, you know, kind of seems a little pathetic sometimes.
Ricky is who Mickey wants to be, really.
Exactly. I mean, and I just, but going back to the Cybermen, basically, you know, Cybermen are, you know, humans 2.0 or upgrade, and they just want, you know, I thought it was a brilliant episode, but I mean, I never saw the Cybermen from, because I never watched the older Doctor Who's, but I mean, I thought it was a great.
They look very similar. Other than the big old, brand name on the chest, and the head's a little bit different. I mean, they're pretty much the same. This episode is, you know, my sisters, you know, walked in while I was watching the episode, and they just were captivated by the show. And that's how they started watching it, was from that episode on, and they've watched every episode since.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
go ahead, Mark.
With the Cybermen, what do you guys think of the Cybermen in comparison to the Doctor?
I thought they were, you know, they were interesting. I mean, I didn't think they were as lethal as the Daleks because, I mean, with the Cybermen, you had time to basically escape because they didn't want to really kill you. They wanted to upgrade you and, you know, to basically turn you into them.
Yeah, I think the Cybermen is just sort of the numbers that's scary, not necessarily the individual Cybermen. It's like, in the season 2 finale, it's like 4 Daleks against millions of Cybermen, and 4 Daleks can just completely take them out. I don't know, it's sort of like zombies, I guess, where if you got 100 zombies walking towards you, you're still going to feel just as scared as long as, like, if 4 zombies were running towards you.
Yeah, with the Daleks, I mean, the Daleks have a gun, so I mean, that's... And
not mentioning the sucker punch thing.
Yeah, and the Cybermen, they walk slow, but, you know, there's a lot of them, so you can get surrounded quite easily. And I can definitely see the inspiration for the Borg through the Cybermen.
Right, because they were all pretty much under one collective thinking, right?
Yeah. And the
mastermind and the rest of them are just like soldiers.
And the whole converting, you know, if you're not going to be converted, then die.
Well, I guess, you know, there wasn't too much that episode. I just want to touch on it because, you know, it introduces a Cyberman and they play, you know, pretty big part with Doctor Who later on.
There goes.
Okay.
I was going to ask, what's the Cybermen's role in the past? In the old 60s episodes and 70s episodes?
I don't know. All I remember is, you know,
they mentioned them?
Stuart saying yesterday that they were in the past episodes.
Yeah. Drop some knowledge about that and the Daleks in the past episodes.
Well, I thought, I could be wrong, but I think that Daleks in the past episode was, you know, that in the old ones, they couldn't, you know, they couldn't fly, I think.
Yeah, that was a big kind of joke among fans was, you know, if you're ever being chased by Daleks, run up the stairs, you know, because they can't get you then. But they fixed that in season one where Daleks fly.
Yeah, I mean, especially when, you know, they're confronted with stairs and they're like, the Daleks like elevate and, you know.
Yeah, we need to discuss the whole Daleks Time Lord War, too.
I don't know much about it other than it happened.
Yeah, okay. That's part of the older episodes, I think, right?
Yeah, I've seen a few.
Okay.
I guess going on to another one of Stuart's favorites, the Impossible Planet / the Satan Pit.
Yes. Again, you know, Stephen Moffat, great writer, does creepy very well. You know, the being suspended on a planet that's in geosynchronous orbit around a black hole, which is impossible. That's the Impossible Planet. Yeah, and, you know, buried beneath the planet is basically Satan, really. He was put there before time began, which the Doctor didn't like that. And, really, I liked, really the part where Satan's about to possess, I still forget his name, the archaeologist, and he's, you know, behind him saying, you know, Toby, I'm right behind you. Don't look at me or you'll die. I'm right behind, I'm getting closer. Don't look at me. I'm reaching out. I'm about to touch you. Just, you know, that was very, very creepy.
I agree. I mean, and then he turns around and there's nothing behind him.
Yeah, but well, he ends up being possessed.
Yeah.
The character of the actor who played Toby used to date Billy Piper before this. So when, like, they're in the tunnels and Toby's right behind Rose, and he complains about the view of looking at Rose's bum. I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah.
Let's see that. See, all this little added stuff makes this show so special.
And I guess we can't forget, you know, another character, or, you know, another race of characters. The Ood was introduced in this episode.
Yeah.
What are the Ood? They're just Ood.
they're very Ood.
Yeah.
And then, it was pretty much implied that they were the bad guy in this episode, but really they were just
they were possessed, basically.
Right, because most of the time you get these new races and they're always the baddies, so to speak. And this time they actually were just another helpless pawn.
I thought it was just interesting that they were, you know, basically possessed by, you know, quote unquote Satan, and when they're standalone, they're a peaceful race, basically.
I mean,
they're nonviolent. Not only a
peaceful race, like a servant race. So, I mean, they're just in their DNA to serve, or so that's how people think, just because they're so peaceful.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was a very good episode where... I liked how... the doctor, you know, was basically, you know, standing over the pit, really. And, you know, he just, you know, was, like, admiring humans because of that urge to keep going, even though, you know, every part of you is telling you no, but you keep going anyway. I've had a bunch of psychology, and so when they introduce, you know, the psychological element in it, those are the episodes I really like.
Yeah, I mean, another part of this episode I kind of liked was when they were, you know, basically crawling through the vents and you know, the captain had to basically, you know, take charge press buttons and guide them and, you know, try to help them. I thought that was pretty interesting because, I mean,
yeah.
He wasn't a normal captain. He, you know, basically, he got, you know, promoted to captain that episode.
He was the actor.
He was the actor captain.
It was good how it showed, like, almost all the characters were willing to make that ultimate sacrifice to put a great the good. You know, and it wasn't an easy decision. They showed them all struggling with it. Like, should they save themselves or should they do the extra thing they know they have to do? It's like you say with the doctor hanging from the pit. He was just hanging there, and he was contemplating if he should go ahead and jump into the darkness or not. And in the end, he just said, hey, what the hell with it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing on this episode was, you know, obviously was good versus evil.
Yeah.
I mean, they just, you know, they just beat you upside the head with that, you know, basically with that. I mean, there were so many different, you know, basically, you know, metaphors or, you know, just references to good versus evil.
Okay, here's a high, do you guys really think that was Satan or just, you know, an incarnation
of evil?
I think it was just,
you know, a question of pure evil, basically. I mean, I don't want to get into, you know, the whole religion, Satan. I don't think that, you know, is, you know, religious Satan, but Satan is just, you know, known to be an incarnation of evil.
Yeah. Well, I was just curious.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously it was an evil entity, and it probably just took on the name of Satan since, you know, it's the biggest amount of fear that could be given from that name, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, I guess if we have no more other comments on this episode or this two-parter, we can go to yet another two-parter, which is the finale, Army of Ghosts / Doomsday, which I believe it's probably a favorite of all of us.
Yeah.
Since, I mean, it's a finale. Basically, we're introduced to yet the Cybermen again, and along with the Daleks.
Yeah, that was just a good, you know, an episode for the fans, because, you know, older fans were like, you know, always had the, you know, like, what would happen if, you know, Daleks versus Cybermen? And basically the writers just said, let's just give it to them. Let's write that fanfic right there and make it canon.
Well, this is an episode where they actually not only time travel, they actually travel back to another dimension, right?
Yes, because the other dimensions, Torchwood basically developed, you know, the technology to jump through universes because they were, you know, the Cybermen weren't defeated in quite, you know, they still remained in the other universe and they were coming to the prime universe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what was so special, I mean, this was pretty much Rose's exit from the, I won't say from the series, but this is her swan song as the Doctor's companion. And, you know, it was in Doomsday when she started narrating the beginning of the episode saying, well, this is the day that she dies.
Yes, which I thought was a brilliant way to start the episode.
Yeah, that one just made you want to sit down and watch the whole episode right then and there.
Yeah, and then especially, you know, the whole, by this time, you know, Rose and the Doctor's relationship, even though they haven't gone past companion stage, you know, the bond was so tight. You know, it was very, very touching episode that they had to say goodbye to each other.
Yeah, and I mean, and to go with the, you know, expanding the Doctor Who universe, this episode is so referenced in an episode. It's actually the main focus of one of the episodes in Torchwood, which I thought was quite interesting, but I guess we can talk about Torchwood another time since Doctor Who's going to take us quite a bit.
And what do you guys think about this Mickey in this universe in comparison to the other Mickey?
Well, you mean how Mickey changed?
Right. But it was like the Mickey, not saying how Mickey, it was Mickey and Ricky, right?
Ricky died, though.
Yeah, Ricky died, and Mickey stayed behind.
Because he was his grandpa.
But Mickey changed to be more like Ricky.
Yes.
How do you like him now in comparison to when the? I guess what I meant to ask. How do you like his character development from episode one, season one, till now?
I liked him. I thought. I mean, he. It was interesting because he was in an alternate universe where Rose was not there. So he wasn't, because I guess Rose basically treated him, you know, like the whipping boy. And, I mean, it really showed. So, and I guess he had the chance, you know, to restart and basically become like Ricky, which we basically said Ricky was basically who he wanted to be.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I really liked how Mickey changed. He's just more of a take charge kind of guy a bit, instead of, you know, just sit back and watch things happen.
Yeah, I like that, because in the first season he was pretty much a wimp and scared of everything. Now he pretty much faces everything. Any adversity comes his way, he'll deal with it instead of running from it.
Yeah, it's like, then again though, I think he was so confident and he changed to be Ricky because of the Cybermen. But then when you see the Daleks come out, he kind of goes back to the Mickey that was in the first episode of season one. Just like way out of his depth.
Yeah, you know, that was interesting because they didn't want to make him all completely military like Ricky. So they wanted to keep some kind of, you know, Mickey in there. Just wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
But, yeah, and I mean, I just love the part where, you know, when the Daleks and the Cybermen confront each other, you know. No, I mean, I just thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, they're going, you know, like, who are you? No, who are you? You first. Yeah. No, you. No, you. Kind of thing.
And the Daleks accidentally, you know, they say their name and they speak, you know, about themselves in the third person. And the Cybermen are like, you are called the Daleks.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I thought that was funny.
These Daleks, you know, they're the cult of Skaro. They're a special sect of Daleks. Yeah, they all have names.
Right, they're more human-like. So
yeah, like they were made to, you know, they were made to think like humans. So they or like not really humans, but Time Lords. So they could fight them better.
And I also like the part where, you know, they were like, you plan on taking on, you know, a million Cybermen with just four Daleks? And they were like, no, just one Dalek.
Yeah. More efficient.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that basically showed, you know, that was kind of a badass move on the Daleks.
The Daleks pretty are so superior that they had nothing to fear from the Cybermen. So.
And in that case, I mean, in a case, Ace versus, you know, Daleks versus Cybermen. Oh. Better, personally, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what y'all think, but
yeah, it was just, you know, Daleks just whooped the Cybermen's ass.
Yeah, I mean, and the Daleks seem to have more humor to them than Cybermen.
A bit. Well, they're funnier, like by accident, really. Like, not really, you know, made to be funny, not cracking jokes, but you know, the way they are can be humorous at times.
Yeah, I saw one of the specials, and they were was a special one of the DVD parts, and they were showing like who does the voice of the Cybermen. I mean the Daleks, and like how they always like when that voice is real funny. So anytime the guy would talk, the cast would just start breaking up laughing, and they had to start over because that voice is so wacky.
Yeah, I mean, I actually discovered, you know, on the internet they had, you know, a ringtone of the Daleks going exterminate, and I got that, you know, but I couldn't keep that for long because it just, you know, creeped me out every time, you know, I get a text message and I would hear, you know, exterminate in the Dalek voice.
Well, sound like you could do a good Dalek impression. Go for it.
Oh no, I can't. I'm not too good at impressions, but yeah. Anyways, any more thoughts on season two?
No, I think that's about it.
Alrighty, we can go into season three, I guess. Where, well, first off, the Runaway Bride, where we are introduced to, basically, we're introduced to Donna.
Yeah.
Which isn't the next, you know, companion. But she is important. She does become a companion later on.
Yeah, I like how this episode, how it really literally picks up right as season two ends. Because, you know, they started with him being depressed that him and Rose had to part. And all of a sudden he just crashed it. And there's this loud, obnoxious ladies on his TARDIS. It doesn't crash, but she just is hers, and he's like looking like, what the hell? And then from then on, it was like, that whole episode was like a, it was like almost like an action movie. It was just like nonstop. Either am I right?
There was a lot of action in this one, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I love the part where, you know, she was trying to get back to her wedding, and she was like, "Do you have any money?" And he's like, "I never really needed money."
Yeah, I was confused in this one with the wasn't she also on a Christmas special?
That's what this one is.
This is a Christmas special. Okay.
Yeah, yes. This was her. She was, you know, getting married to the guy who basically, you know, was, you know, working for the aliens.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And didn't love her at all. So yeah.
Which I can't blame the guy.
But that part was kind of sad because he went in on her. He's like, "Who would love you? You're loud. You're not every little fault that she had is just the alien was pointing it out." It's kind of funny, but at the same time, kind of sad.
What are your thoughts, Cookie? We know how you feel about Donna, so.
Yeah, well, she's easily the best companion, at least. At least main companion. I mean, I think Wilf would, like, give her money, but he was only in two episodes, so. I think, what do you guys think about her, like, the way it all played out? Because in season, she seemed like kind of a throwaway character, but then in season 4, the way all that was, it just tied in so perfectly that, do you think they had it planned out that she was going to be in season 4 from the start of the Christmas Invasion?
I think I heard that she was going to be a companion, but she was busy doing something else at the time of season 3. But they really liked the character of Donna, so they waited until season 4. I could be wrong with that.
I mean, it worked out good that it took a break in that, but it seemed like from that episode that it seemed like they really had some intention of making her a companion because they left her all alone and everything by the end of this episode. So she's, you know, like a perfect companion, especially the way that she treated the doctor, like. You know, Doctor was so used to his companions always fawning over him, and she was like, "Whatever, you're near nobody."
Whatever, spaceman.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna have to argue with Cookie here. I don't think Donna is one of the best companions. Like, I think people say that because season 4 was one of the best seasons, and she just happened to be the companion during it.
Well, she was the reason why. Well, we can get into season 4. When we're on season 3 right now, though.
Okay. We'll take that out.
I agree.
Better.
Yeah.
I agree with Cookie, though. I think that she was the best companion.
I agree, too. But we'll get into that debate, Stuart, in season 4, when season 4 comes up.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the next episode is the actual introduction to the new companion for this season. The episode's Smith and Jones, where Martha Jones is introduced. Now, Stuart, you want to lead this conversation?
Yes, I know I'm alone here, but I kind of liked Martha as a companion.
You are alone.
Yes,
no,
you're
not alone. She was a good companion, but she just was the worst of the best, in my opinion.
Okay, I'll take that. She was the worst of the best.
She came in at the wrong time. Just unfortunate.
Okay, what I liked about Martha is that with, you know, the other companions, you know, they started off, you know, just, you know, not really thinking like a companion does towards the end. But Martha started out that way. She was already, you know, you know, from Smith and Jones, you know, she was asking, you know, what are we trespassing on the moon? You know, she was already starting to think that like that. You know, she had some, you know, she was a doctor. She had some intelligence. I'm not saying the others are dumb, but she had something there beforehand.
Right. I feel that she was able, she had a lot of the problem-solving skills innately built into her. So she was able to do a lot of stuff that the doctor, you know, she was figuring out some, not all problems, but she figured out a lot of problems on her own without breaking down and explain it to her.
Yes, and we can't, I mean, to be fair, I mean, with, like, Rose was basically a kid when, you know, she was only 19 when she joined the doctor. I mean, Martha, she was about to become a doctor herself.
Yeah, and that takes a bit of time.
Yeah, so there's a big difference there. So we can, I mean, it's easily, you know, can be said that Martha was more intelligent than Rose from the beginning, you know? But, I mean, I think this episode was, you know, it was interesting, you know, the whole hospital being transported to the moon and...
Yeah, well, once again, these companions and these people aren't too shaken by these events. You know, she kept her composure. Everybody else was kind of freaking out. You know, their hospital's on the moon, and she's calm and collected for the most part.
Yeah,
I mean, it seems like... Hold on.
I was just going to say, it's more like, you know, what Stuart said. She was asking, you know, how are we still breathing, you know?
Yeah, she was...
Questions like that.
Yeah, she was thinking already.
Yeah, it's like...
Instead of just being scared.
Yeah, she was like all... She was ready to be a companion, like, from the get-go, I guess. Like, whereas the others were just freaking out, maybe for like the first couple of episodes, she was just like right there, ready to go, like, started off running.
Yeah, I think like everybody's always so down on her. It's just, she was pretty much the rebound girl. You know,
yeah.
Everybody was so taken with the doctor and Rose's relationship, the fact that she could be even thought of being replaced. They made sure they treated it as such. And she always was at an arm's length from the doctor. The doctor made sure he did not get any kind of close to her. And that I think, made the impression to everybody that she was such a bad companion. Well, I mean, not say a bad companion, but I guess it was because their relationship could only go so far. And it was
always
one-sided.
Yeah, that he didn't love her back.
Right. It was always one-sided with this companion.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of, you know, like, you know, did, you know, the divorce and the dad dating someone else and, you know, you don't want that person to be your new mommy. You like the old, you know.
You know, it was pretty obvious of all his companions that he cared for her. I mean, the least. He didn't get that family bond with her ever. I mean, he cared about it. He didn't want nothing bad to happen to her. But at the same time, he didn't ever get that kind of bond like he did with Donna. Even though him and Donna didn't get that romantic kind of vibe, they still... Hey, formed a closer knit family than him and her family. The doctor and her family became close, whereas the doctor never got close
with Martha's
family.
Yeah,
and I think that's a big point. That's a big part of it. You know, I mean, Martha was trying to basically take Rose's place. You know, and we, you know, for two seasons we ended up liking Rose, so. I guess that's probably a reason why a lot of us don't like Martha as much, though.
Yeah, I think it's also that, like, in The Runaway Bride, everybody seemed to, like, they were just getting over Rose, but with Donna, it was like, it seemed like everybody wanted her to be the companion straight away, and it was almost like Martha was a letdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd have to agree with that.
Yeah, because, I mean, the introduction of Donna in that Christmas episode, she was combative with the doctor, and you know that was able to get him out of his doldrums. But with Martha, he was kind of it was just somebody that was there that could handle the you know what he's doing. So you know she proved herself competent to be able to be at his side, just off of her intelligence. So he chose her as a companion just so he wouldn't be alone.
Okay. Any more thoughts on, I guess, you know, this episode or, you know, Martha, the introduction of Martha? Or do we want to move on to Cookie's, one of Cookie's favorites, which is Gridlock?
Yeah, we can move on.
Okay. Cookie, do you want to lead the discussion on this episode? It's one of your favorites?
Yeah. Gridlock. I think it's one of those episodes where it's a break from the norm, I guess. I think it's one of those episodes where it's focused almost solely on the Doctor, even though it's the Doctor going to try and get Martha back. It's like, it's just following him and how he gets around on his own, I guess. I think it's that kind of insight that just makes it so much better than... It just puts it heads and shoulders above the rest of the episodes. And not necessarily because Martha's bad or anything, just because, I guess it's just a change. And especially, you've got the face of Beau, which we all know is Captain Jack, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that was one of the, you know, basically it was a fanboy moment when I learned that.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, when I first saw that episode, that into Doctor Who, but I mean, just the fact that he said that, I mean, I was just, yeah, just a fanboy moment. It was brilliant.
Yeah, that was such a big reveal. I mean, I thought that maybe, the fact that the timing of him being told this too, because after this, I'm not sure how much more interaction, I mean, he does deal with Jack after this, and, you know, he pretty much has to keep this a secret from him. He doesn't, I mean, he just does never mention it. So once again, it shows like the depth of the show that Doctor, with all his time traveling, knows so many secrets.
Yeah, but that really is the question, you know, did they, you know, plan on, you know, Captain Jack being the face of Beau, like, well, you know, well beforehand, you know, back in season 1, episode 2, or...
Well, I think the finale, when Rose brought him back, you know, to life, you know, with the heart of the TARDIS, I think maybe then they realized, you know, he was going to be the face of Beau. At least.
Yeah.
At least then. If not...
I like to think that it was all planned out. Not necessarily...
I never thought of, you know, when, you know, humans get, you know, into the millions, you know, their head just gets really big and their body disappears. I never really thought that would happen, but...
Yeah, and the thing is, like, when, you know, some of the stuff they don't explain, if you watch Torchwood, you know, there's a part in Torchwood where the whole mystery, did Jack actually take enough damage to actually die? And if you saw this episode already, that would take all of it. All of that guessing out for you. So, you know, that's why I think it's good. If anybody asks me when you should pick up Torchwood and start watching it, I'd say, like, middle of season 2.
Well, the face of Beau was already in the original series, so, at least I think it was. It wasn't exactly planned out from the very beginning, but just, I like to think that they planned it out from when they introduced Jack.
Yeah, from the relaunch, it seems like it, because this is, you know, after he was brought back to life, and the whole point of him not being able to die, it seemed like they had enough forethought to say, well, we're going to make him the face of Beau. Like, how cool
would
that be?
And the fact that the face of Beau was in the second episode, and that he was in, like, and he was in a good 3 or 4 episodes of the first season, just, like, in passing, not necessarily as a main character, but... just as a passing note, I guess.
Yeah,
which kind of makes you wonder, like, why didn't, you know, the face of Beau say, you know, not really who he is, but just say, you know, like, I've met you, like other people have done?
Well, maybe just because, I guess, knowing what transpires in time, that he figures that the timing of when he makes his reveal will be all important for him. Because think about how the Doctor treated Jack in the first season. He might not have treated him with such the same way.
I mean, he did say that the face of Beau and the Doctor have met before, but I think that's just sort of another passing comment. I think he says, like, it's in reference, apparently, to the second episode of the first season, but I guess you could kind of take it as being Captain Jack and not necessarily that one, because they didn't really even see... I don't think they even made, even had lines together in the second episode of the first season.
No. Well, actually, the face of Beau didn't even have lines at all.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just, it depends how you look at it, how deep you look into it.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that, I mean, he couldn't have told him, you know, I'm Captain Jack, you will meet me, or whatever, because, like, he wouldn't have left Captain Jack, you know, when he did, he would have, you know, went back for him and saved him if he knew, you know, He was the face of Bo, and he was so important. He would have basically changed the way his actions, which would have changed, you know, the way played out.
Like, not really say, you know, who he was, but, you know, like, oh, hi, Dr. Knight, nice to see you again. You know, something like that, which, you know, that happens to the doctor all the time, you know, with as being a time traveler. He meets people that he hasn't met yet. You know, they haven't met him, they've met him, but he hasn't met them. That makes sense in the time travel-y kind of way.
Yes.
Wibbly-wobbly-timey-wimey.
Yes, exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, even in that second, at that point, because he hadn't regenerated yet, he'd have had to have known anyway. Like, either way, he'd have known that, oh, he probably hasn't met me yet. Like, since... Well, yeah, he wouldn't have met him yet, because he saw him up until his regeneration, so... He knows that he can't really meddle with that, I guess.
Okay. Do we want to move on to the next episode? Which...
Yeah, okay.
Which is Human Nature.
Yes. Okay. Human Nature and Family of Blood, those are my favorites. Because even though this is not Stephen Moffat, Paul Cornell did Creepy very, very well. The doctor became human in this episode. You know, he became John Smith, like the year before World War I, which I thought that was kind of interesting how, I don't know much, you know, did they actually have, you know, academies like that, Cookie, back then,
If my history says, I think they did, yeah. It was that kind of formality, that kind of thing, yeah.
I mean, with the, you know, like, the kids, you know, having target practice with, you know, Gatling guns.
Not entirely sure about that, but depending when it was, the war might have just been starting to break out, or they might have been preparing, I guess.
1913 is when it was.
It was the year before.
Yeah, I think it was, like... early 1914 that it started, depending, like, what was going on. Was it Germany was going, invading places? They were.
Like, during target practice, they said, you know, those are the people from the Dark Continent, so which is Africa.
Oh,
so.
In that case, I have no idea. I presume these would be.
Yeah, I just, you know, thought I'd ask since you were here. Creepy children.
Little girls with balloons.
Yeah, she never let go of that balloon. and the walking scarecrow, that was creepy again. I like creepy, if you guys haven't guessed.
I figured, I mean.
Yeah, you're gonna love this season coming up.
Oh, I can't wait.
But, we're also forgetting, this is the episode where the doctor basically, you know, put his, you know, basically became a human.
I said that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, but this was once again a slap in the face of Martha, because he finally becomes human and able to express his feelings for somebody. He chooses somebody else, and she has to sit there and watch him fall in love with somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what I was also gonna say was he becomes human and he basically puts, you know, his essence into it. It shows, you know, the watch, you know, basically is gonna come back. Basically, the concept of that watch, you know, is gonna come back and play a big role.
Yeah, the watch is actually not the first appearance of the watch. The watch actually appeared in the movie, the 1996 movie, because this episode is really, you know, because, like, people were wondering, like, was that doctor really canon, you know, or just was that a story? But, you know, that episode, you know, really brought around that actually was the Eighth Doctor, you know, that proved that he was, that all that was canon, unfortunately.
Right, but I mean, with... You know, the newer stuff, the stuff we're watching. We had no idea about the watch.
Just saying. that, okay. You know, it's not the first appearance of the Watch in the series.
Well, yeah, I'm sure, you know, there's been a lot more, you know, lots of stuff in this, you know, since 2005 up until now, where, you know, it hasn't been the first of, but it's been the first of, you know, basically that we've seen, our generation has seen, you know. But it also gives a nod to, you know, you also look back on one of the episodes later on, and it basically gives you, you know, the understanding, you know. But we'll talk about that when we get to that episode. any more on this episode, though? I mean,
I did like how the Doctor didn't kill the family of Blood, really. Like, he just put them in a place where they're not going to hurt anybody anymore. Like, with the father, he threw him into, like, an endless pit in unbreakable chains. With the mother, he threw her into a collapsing star to be there for eternity. With the son, froze him in time, really, and made him a scarecrow. And with the daughter, put her in the mirrors. So, like,
yeah.
Like, every time you look in a mirror, if you see something move behind you, that's her, which is,
yeah,
again, creepy.
Yeah, I love that part. And, like, I mean, it really shows, you know, what the Doctor is capable of. I mean, before then, I didn't think the Doctor was capable of anything like that, you know. And it makes you think, you know, if the Doctor didn't have all his rules, I mean, he could get, you know, things accomplished easier than, you know.
And he does, yeah.
The prompts he has, yeah. But okay, next episode is probably one of everyone's favorites, period, which is Blink.
And to mention, again, this is Stephen Moffat. He's my favorite writer.
So, anybody want to lead this discussion, or?
I thought this episode was some of the best sci-fi. I mean, first of all, Doctor and Martha were barely in the episode.
Yeah, it was a Doctor Light episode.
But it's still a Doctor Who episode. I mean, just shows the complexity of time travel and everything also. You know, basically this episode is, you know, with the angels that stare at you and send you back in time and freeze you. And somehow the Doctor is able to get a message to somebody in the future to be able to contact them.
Well, I mean, the Doctor, he basically, the angels, you know, teleported him and Martha back in time, and then they ended up teleporting, you know, basically the cop, and basically the Doctor was like, I have a message for you, but it's going to take a really long time. And he had that Doctor, you know, put all the Easter eggs of him and Martha in the DVDs, you know, and like you said, it's just a good example of, you know, time travel and the complexities of it. Because, I mean, with the whole, you know, script of what they were saying and that was eventually given to him, and he knew what to say, I mean, it was just a brilliant episode.
And also show you how smart the Doctor is. Because, I mean, that took a lot of thought to be able to put those Easter eggs the way he put them in which he was basically communicating straight with the character, Sally?
Yep, Sally Sparrow.
I mean, it also shows, I mean, Sally was pretty smart herself, I mean, you know.
Yeah, because she put all that together.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it's hard to explain this episode. It's like you'd have to really just sit down and really watch it to get a lot of the complexities in this episode. But for all of us to say that's one of our favorites, it's saying something. And not only favorites this season, it's one of my favorites, period.
Yeah.
Exactly. And this was where, you know, his famous phrase that we've used a few times already comes into play.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Exactly.
Yeah, this episode, you know, by this time my sisters are watching. They were watching it through their fingers because it scared them so much. I should also mention that my sisters are 12.
Well, I mean, it's understandable. This really was a, you know, creepy episode.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing I loved the most was the doctor, you know, had his TARDIS where, you know, where it was, or the TARDIS was where it was, you know, so when it left without them, they were, you know, they thought, oh no, they're going to get us, it's leaving without us, and they were all the, you know, all the statue, you know, crying angels were around each other, so they were stuck there forever.
Until somebody moved them.
Oh yeah, until somebody would move them, but I thought that was brilliant. Or I guess until the lights went out completely.
Why didn't they break the statues?
I kind of wanted that myself. Like, why didn't you break them?
Well, that wouldn't make good television now, would it?
Makes sense. Common,
yeah. But we also can't forget, you know, that the end where she meets the doctor and the doctor hasn't, you know, it hasn't happened for him yet.
Yeah, it's one of those things earlier. Where, you know, she's met him, but he hasn't met her.
Which at the end is totally like, you know.
That was a mind-blowing thing that actually was her taking the notes. Her notes are what gave the doctor. Because that whole episode, you wonder, how was he so smart to be able to do that? It wasn't that he was so smart, it's that he had the notes handed to him.
Yeah, and up until that point, the episode was all right, but that made the episode brilliant. I mean, that just, you know,
yeah,
put everything together and just made it an awesome episode at the very end. So,
I guess we can go on to the final three episodes.
Yes, which are the Utopia, the Sounds of Drums, and the last of the Time Lords, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Where we are introduced to Captain Jack again.
Yeah.
Which takes off from, you know, basically Torchwood.
Yeah, minutes after the final, you know, Jack runs out at the end of Torchwood Season 1. Minutes after that is where Jack runs out at the beginning of the Utopia episode.
Which I just have to say, they had to have all this stuff planned because everything seems to work out so perfectly. So smoothly, it seems like, story-wise. It's really impressive.
Well, it would kind of have to, or, you know, geeks like us would, you know, tear it apart.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is, you know, basically they go, you know, to the end, towards, you know, the end, you know, where, yeah, it's the end of, like, basically everything where, you know, the sun's burned out, basically.
The end of the universe.
Yeah, the end of the universe. And the humans, you know, the humans are, you know, hiding from these creatures, you know, basically humans with, you know, bad teeth, I guess.
Yeah, that's basically what they were, and with a more primal nature about them.
Yeah.
The future kind, that's what they called them.
Yeah. And, I mean, we're introduced, you know, I can't think of her name, but, I mean, we're introduced to, you know, the science guy, the, you know, it turns out to be the master, you know.
Let's see, Professor Yana and Chanto.
Chanto, oh, I enjoyed that character. I don't know why, she just seemed like a good character, you know?
She was likable. She was very likable.
I mean, she's just interesting, you know? I mean, I guess it was just one of those, you know, aliens who looked totally different, but yet was so friendly, you know?
Yeah.
Which you see aliens, you know, that look weird and totally different, and they seem to be the enemies. It was just a change, I guess, a refreshing change. But, I mean, these three episodes introduce us to yet the second Time Lord, you know, that survived.
Yeah.
Which, basically, he was human, but he also had a pocket watch, which, you know, kept his. And Martha had to, you know, basically blab her mouth and, you know, get, you know, the professor interested in the watch, and basically he ended up opening it and becoming the master.
Yeah.
So it's basically Martha's fault for all the stuff that happened.
I never really looked at it that way, but I guess you're right.
Oops.
Yeah.
Another reason to hate her.
And, so what you guys think about the master then?
I enjoyed the master. I mean, I think the actor was just amazing, you know, playing him.
John Sims.
Yeah, he was just an interesting character. I mean, he heard the sounds, you know, of the drums in his head. And, I mean, he just played crazy really well.
Yeah, and by the time they finally explained that in the end of season four, that was awesome.
Well, it was not the end of season. It was just this past Christmas.
Right.
Yeah, they classed it as, like, the second season finale for season four, I guess.
Right. So,
yeah. But, I mean, I thought it was brilliant, you know. The doctor has, you know, the TARDIS set, you know, to basically go back to, you know, either where they were, you know, where they were there at the end of the universe, or back to, you know, the, you know, Cardiff, you know, and
which in season three, the thing to watch out for the entire season is Saxon.
Oh yes, exactly. And they get out, and turns out the master was there for 18 months earlier.
Yes.
And ended up becoming the prime minister, which was interesting. It was very interesting.
And the fact that, you know, a lot of times when you have a villain, they always play like they're not as smart as a hero. But in a lot of ways, he was smarter than the doctor. He was always one step ahead of him.
Yeah, some of the best villains of basically any show or comic or whatever is the exact opposite of the hero. And that is what the master is, the exact opposite of the doctor. I mean, even to the point where, you know, he has a laser screwdriver instead of a sonic screwdriver.
Right, and you know, it's just like one incident that could have happened in which he could have been just like the doctor.
Yes.
Or the doctor could have just been just like him.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's very interesting to think about. But going back to, you know, what did y'all think about the whole, you know, once he was prime minister, the whole the Takla thing, you know, the coming to Earth and basically, you know, they were the survival the humans from who were heading to Utopia, and the whole, you know, turning the TARDIS into a paradox machine. Or what did y'all think about that?
I think for me it was done with so much detail. It's just like, it's just brilliantly done. I mean, the planning that had to go into all of that and stuff. I mean, the Prime Minister thing's a little far-fetched, just because I think he'd have been taken, like, out of that position after, like, the first day or something. I mean, but other than that, I thought it's just a brilliant season finale. A brilliant three episodes.
Yeah. I just have to also add, one of my favorite parts was when he had the music playing, and he was, you know, just, like, basically dancing, and I just thought that was just hilarious, you know?
Yeah, I actually went and found that music, because, you know, like, that was just one of my favorite parts, is, you know, both parts, really, like, the here comes the drums, and the when he's wheeling around the doctor, and he's singing along.
Yeah, and this was pretty much also the going out party for Martha, which it was, I don't want to say kind of a shock, because she just, like, abruptly decided, like, okay, this, I can't do this anymore.
Well, no, for her, it took her a year.
Yeah, but, I mean, it took her a year of trying and trying and trying, and when she realized that she could never pretty much be, only way for her not to completely keep on not being in love with the doctor was for her to get away from him.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was interesting, you know. Took her a year to clean up her own mistake, basically. With the doctor's help. I mean, I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, being a year away from the doctor, that's helped made that decision.
Right. But the fact that she made it, because all those other companions in the past were like, they couldn't give up that life. And she, you know, it took her that year and I guess all the trials and her becoming her own person. But pretty much that was her. She came of age during that time.
Yeah, when she was spreading the word of the doctor and...
Yeah, I liked the how they kind of tricked the doctor, the master, into thinking, you know, like she's going around the world, you know, building a weapon. When, as a matter of fact, she's just going around and just telling her story, and telling them, you know, at a certain point, you know, certain date, certain time, think this one word.
Yeah, I think that's just like. So it shows how the master just kind of... It all went to his head. I mean, like...
Yeah.
He just completely forgot that... Well, the doctor would never make a weapon. Something like that. It's just... It's something he wouldn't do.
Yeah, I mean... Probably one of my favorite... You know, just because I enjoyed the master's character so well. I mean, just especially because... He didn't try to kill the doctor. He kept the doctor around and basically was messing with him and being, you know, having fun, and it was just interesting.
But that also shows something with him. He didn't want to be alone. He never wanted to kill the doctor. I mean, he did to a point, but he wanted to also gloat to him that his way was the right way.
Well, I mean, the master didn't want to kill the doctor for the same reason the doctor didn't want to kill the master.
Right, they were brothers, they're the only ones left.
Yeah, they'd be the only one. They didn't really want to be alone.
Yeah, but the master's wife ended up, you know, shooting him, and I thought that was very interesting when the doctor's like, come on, just regenerate, and the master's basically, you know,
that's his final revenge. Like, I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die.
I win. Yeah, I win. I like that. I really like that.
Because I mean, it showed you know, things going back to the, you know, basically, you know, the doctor kind of winning but yet losing at the same time. Because he was alone in the universe yet again, after he discovered that there was someone else out there.
Yeah, I think it's just that. Thing that no matter how big of enemies they are, the fact that they are both, I guess, same species, it's just that kind of conquers all, like, their hatred toward each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so any more thoughts on this? On season 3? I do want to also say, I love the part where, you know, it showed Martha's sister, you know, basically feed Captain Jack, and he was basically, you know, he didn't seem all depressed like them. He was, you know.
He was just ready to go.
Yeah, he was all ready to go, cheery, and I just showed, I mean, just another thing about Captain Jack, made just a good character, basically.
Yeah, that's just, like, one of the many reasons why Captain Jack is so awesome, and how John Bowman does such a good job playing Captain Jack.
Yeah.
Okay. Looks like we can head on to season 4. Yet another, you know, Christmas special.
I want to talk about the children in need.
Oh, okay.
The one right between this, where, I forget.
Him and Peter Davis, or
is it Peter Davis?
It's Peter Davis, I think.
Oh, no, the children need between season 3 and 4. That's the one where it's the next...
Yes.
The next doctor, I think, or something like that.
The next doctor was another special. That was a special.
Yeah, that was a special after season 4.
They had a Oh, right, because they had a children's league thing for that as well.
This was when the TARDIS, you know, two TARDISes and two different doctors, you know, different times in the doctor's life collided together. It was the Peter Davis one and...
Yes.
And, you know, David Tennant. And basically, you know, they were interacting with each other. And I thought it was just funny when, you know, he was like, you know who I am? And he's like, oh, I know who you are. You're a fan.
Well, no, he really was. I mean, you could tell during that, you know, during those 5 minutes, like he was just, you know, he was in fanboy moment during that. You know, when he said, you know, you were my doctor. Because that was the doctor that David Tennant grew up watching.
Yeah, I think just seeing that is, it's just brilliant. Like, just the way that even now, that, like, Peter Davison doctor can have that kind of effect on someone.
Yeah.
I mean, I suggest anyone, I didn't even know this existed till, you know, yesterday, and I ended up watching it, and... But I suggest if anyone's a Doctor Who fan and has not seen this, YouTube it. I mean, Children in Need, what, 2007?
Seven.
Yeah, Doctor Who. I'm sure it's not too hard to find on YouTube, but...
If you go on YouTube, put in, like, Children in Need Doctor Who, there'll be about three or four different Children in Need ones. Especially, look for the Catherine Tate and David Tennant one. That's a brilliant one. Which isn't actually Doctor Who, but it's just brilliant.
Yeah, that's the one, this teacher one.
Yeah, where he's her teacher.
That was brilliant. I was laughing so hard for that one.
I think that's why I love Donna's character so much, just because it's based on the character of Lauren in the Catherine Tate show. It's just so good.
Of course. I mean Catherine Tate. It's a shame. I have, you know, there's not much else of hers that I could, you know, basically watch since I'm in America and I don't have access to, you know, a lot of the stuff she's done. Because she's just been a great performer, you know, just a great actress in Doctor Who. But I guess since we talked about, you know, the special and had a little tangent there, we can go on to get the other Christmas episode or Christmas special. Very interesting that they have Christmas specials. You know, I just find that interesting.
Yeah, you don't usually find that, you know, here, because, really.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, like, because we only have, like, with English programs, they generally only have, like, 12 episodes in a season, and that's generally, like, the start of the year, so I think it's, like, to give you something to tide you over. Most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, even with the last, like, five specials, that was basically a series within itself. But it was just over, like, 4 months between each episode.
Yeah. This one was Voyage of the Damned, which I actually ended up seeing this after, you know, I saw season 4. Because I didn't have access to this episode, you know, till later on. But basically, I mean, this was an interesting episode. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed, you know, it was funny, you know, because it was the Titanic, you know, in basically a spaceship called the Titanic.
Yes.
Yeah, and they didn't know why they named it, because they named it because it was the unsinkable ship, and they didn't quite find out the rest of the story.
Yeah,
that was a bit funny.
What I loved was the tour guide, basically, who was, you know, just talking all this stuff about Earth and what, and he had no idea. I mean,
and how, you know, that the UK goes and fights Turkey and eats them.
Yeah.
That was really funny. And then the god Santa, who has these massive claws.
Like the fact that they have that kind of stuff, it's just that attention to detail, like you can think of all that stuff, it's just the writing's brilliant.
Yeah, and since I saw this, you know, this is one of the last Doctor Who things I saw, So it made a lot more sense when you saw, you know, Doctor Who was on Earth and he saw, you know, Donna's grandfather.
Who you didn't know.
That's
sense to me.
Brilliant.
Yeah, you didn't know that was, you know, his grandfather until, you know, Donna's grandfather until, you know, Partners in Crime.
Yeah, I mean, even with that, though, that's just like, that episode is tying in stuff with the episodes at the end of time. I mean, that foresight is brilliant.
Yes, another example of the writing just going so smoothly. But
again, you know, did they plan that out? That's the big question.
It just worked out too well.
They had that plan from season three. I mean, yeah, they had that plan from season three.
Yeah, okay. But also, I mean, we can't have, you know, a Doctor Who without some sort of companion. I mean, what did y'all think of the, you know, the
Astrid Path?
Yeah.
I mean, Kylie Minogue's brilliant. I mean, I wasn't expecting much just because I figured it'd be Kylie Minogue. You won't really think of much. You won't really see much else, but
is that who that was? Really?
Yeah.
I thought she looked familiar. I just never really felt like looking it up. Huh.
Yeah, there's a big, like, who part about it.
Well, that's, you know, how people felt about Billy Piper as well, because, you know, the comparison I've heard about Billy Piper is, you know, she was the Britney Spears of the UK before Doctor Who.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, because she had a musical career beforehand.
Yeah, she was like 15 at the time. I don't think it lasted very long, but she was pretty popular at the time.
Yeah. And now she's doing that Diary of a Call Girl or Secret Diary of whatever, you know, where she plays a prostitute.
Yeah.
Although
she'll be forever known as Rose Tyler now.
I know, I think it's funny. Rose Tyler
is
a prostitute.
Better than a prostitute, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a UK Britney Spears. But yeah, I mean, I thought this episode, I thought this, you know, special was pretty good. I mean, it was probably one of my favorites out of the Christmas specials, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It probably was my favorite, yeah. Thinking about it. I mean, I did like The Runaway Bride, but, because it had Donna, but as far as, you know, the story and the villains just seemed more interesting in this, you know? Especially because it showed, again, character, you know, it had interesting characters.
Well, which did you think was the worst Christmas special? Because I hated The Next Doctor.
Yeah.
I did not like that either. But, I mean, like, we'll get to that. But, like I said, it had some interesting characters. Like the couple who you know, ended up winning the trip. But it turned out the chick ended up, you know, calling, you know, how many times or whatever.
Yeah, they could have just paid for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the little guy, the little red guy. I can't think of his name. Y'all know who I'm talking about, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name either.
Because later on, in the end of time, they make a reference to him. Which
yeah,
like,
funny.
They're just a slightly different species or something.
But I just love that character. He was awesome. The little, the cyborg little guy.
Like Bad Afagata? Something like that.
Yeah. Oh, I could never say it, but it was a pretty funny name. But and then, I mean, just it was just another example of, you know, the side characters having to work together, you know, and you know, it wasn't just the Doctor. It was other characters working together.
That little guy's name was Bana Kafalata.
I was close.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
really
sounds right.
Name.
Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't even want to try to say it without, you know, knowing for sure.
I think it's Banana Catalata, I think. Yeah, it's weird.
But what did you think, Mark?
I don't think he's back yet.
Yeah, he's not here.
He's not back yet? Okay.
Yeah, Mark had to go for a bit.
Yeah.
And we can't stop.
I understand that. Okay.